Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Affected by Altitude, a Colorado Rockies podcast for and by Rockies fans on Rocky Mountain Rooftop. Thank you for joining us as we discuss all things baseball and Colorado Rockies. Hello and welcome to Affected by Altitude, a Colorado Rockies podcast on Rocky Mountain Rooftop, the Rockies affiliate of Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Evan Lang, and with me, as always, is my partner in crime with shiny headphones and a Northern Colorado Owls jersey, Skylar Timmons.
It's me, and it's windy, and the people watching the video version can slowly see my awful facial hair trying to grow.
Give it a couple weeks, folks. It's that anyone with facial hair knows it's the awkward middle phase of going from clean shaven to having facial hair.
This has been growing for months.
Oh. Oh, no.
It doesn't run well in the Timmons family there, Evan.
I don't know how that feels because I don't get connection between the chin and the sides of my face. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to if you remember what CJ Krohn's beard looked like when he had his beard grown out. Very similar to that.
I would kill for that. Anything, but it's just this gross little neck beard. And
hey, my pride and joy is the mustache. The mustache will never go.
The mustache, which moustache. Like how come every baseball player is just incredibly handsome growing facial hair, able to grow facial hair too?
You know, I don't think it's all of them though. I think there's plenty who don't. Jordan Beck, I love very much. I think he's a great prospect. He's an awesome guy to talk to. Buddy, that mustache ain't working for you.
That old the French waiter. Bonjour, I'm here to serve you a single.
Nick Mears came up, one of his call-ups last year. He had a mustache and it looked not ideal. Some guys just don't grow facial hair that well. And, you know, that's how Nolan Arenado couldn't really grow facial hair very well.
Mm-hmm. But it was still like a nice refined. It was a good look for him.
It's because you got to keep it trimmed. You got to take care of it. I tell you who has a really pretty impressive beard right now. Trevor Story. He's really grown out the beard. But we're not here to talk about baseball players' facial hair, though maybe that'll be another episode we do in conjunction with every Rocky ever, the history of facial hair with the Colorado Rockies.
Ranking Rockies mustaches.
Who's it? Mike Munoz had a pretty good mustache.
I don't know.
Charlie Blackman obviously is the winner.
Mm-hmm. Ben Paulson's mustache.
Ben Paulson's mustache was pretty good. You know who had a good mustache for the time is Rafael Palmeiro. Mm. That was a good mustache. Not a Rocky, but good mustache.
Jim Leland.
Jim Leland, excellent mustache. But like I said, we're not here to talk about mustaches. Or apparently we are, because we're about 4 minutes in And we've mostly been talking about mustaches and other facial hair.
Mustache. But
the main thing we really need to talk about today is something. Skylar recorded a good little standalone piece. If you haven't listened to it already, I would recommend going and checking it out. Because last week, the Rockies, out of nowhere, made a trade that surprised a whole lot of people, myself included, in which they traded a pitching prospect, Joe Rock, to the Tampa Bay Rays for outfielder and middle infielder Greg Jones. Very strange trade, honestly.
Baffling.
I would say baffling. I've spoken about it at length on my social medias, but for the Rockies, a team that are incredibly pitching needy, to trade a guy who was in their top 20 for prospects and top 20 in our Purple Rose rankings, who is a pitcher who showed some promise, but you know, wasn't quite there yet, in Joe Rock for yet another outfielder, yet another middle infielder in Greg Jones, who is a lot lower down on the prospect board for the Rays, and he arrives at the Rockies as their number 23 prospect. He's also 26 years old versus Joe Rock's 23. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me, especially because we are so jammed up with outfield prospects and pitching and middle infield prospects, shortstops and second basemen, and what it goes against what the Rockies have said their organizational philosophy was draft pitchers. It's all about pitching prospects. So I'm very confused. And Skylar, I know that you, you've talked about this at length already, but just what are your thoughts on this trade?
It's like you were saying, it just doesn't make sense. I think that's the big thing. And well, we've been talking about, and we'll get into it, of the implications of acquiring him. What does it mean for the roster? Because he gets put on the 40 man, and is it them just hedging their bets for more depth for a guy that's on the cusp of maybe making the big leagues? But here's the thing that confuses me, Evan. Looking, this dude has only played he's technically played three positions in his minor league career, primarily shortstop, has played in the outfield, but mostly it's just been center field. So he's been playing two premium positions, and that's what the Rockies have been looking for, is a guy to back up Tovar, guy to back up Doyle. And maybe they found somebody who can, all in one, that can do those two things. But then it's like, well, he's pretty limited in his versatility still, because you know, you still need a guy that can play second base, maybe another utility infielder overall type of thing. And he just doesn't fit that bill at the moment, when you have guys like Alan Trejo, Coco Montez, Aaron Shunk could be in that mix. And then the outfield, you have Zimmer and Sam Hilliard, who is designated for assignment because of this move. It just doesn't make sense. And I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. When you need pitching and you have a good, decent pitcher in Joe Rock, their number 15 prospect, according to Pipeline, why trade him away for a guy that maybe he's a defensive utility infielder backup guy off the bench? Whereas Joe Rock could have been a starter, could have made his appearance with the Rockies by the end of this season. So it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and outside of, he didn't convert to outfield until last season, where he played mostly center field and a little bit of right field, like six games. Before that, he was a shortstop, and he's got some perks. I talked about this on my social media as well. There are things to like about Greg Jones. It's not all bad. He's got incredible speed. MLB Pipeline grades his speed at a 70, which is elite speed. He's very quick. He's got good range as well. He is a rangy fielder. The issue, though, is that really hasn't converted into solid defense. He's made a decent amount of errors throughout his career. And part of that is attributed to the fact that he is trying to make all of these difficult plays is what it sounds like. I've talked to some of the Rays writers. I've talked to some other folks. He tries to make all these difficult plays utilizing his range because he has good range. But what's important in a defender is recognizing when you need to try and make a simple play and not make things worse by trying to turn a difficult play and having it blow up in your face with an error. So that's a point of concern for me.
And we can also take that in some context because errors get handed out for some of the weirdest things. If it's just pulling the guy off the base and even pulls the first baseman off, that's attributed to an error. It wasn't a terrible play in the fact he can get to maybe some of those plays is incredible. And sometimes errors are a little unfair, but to your point still, it's recognizing, oh, I have no chance of getting this guy. I just knock this down, hold on to it. And instead of risking throwing it away on this difficult play.
He's got solid pop in his bat. Like he does have raw power potential. He's hit a decent number of home runs throughout his minor league career, where last season in AAA Durham, he had 7 home runs and then he had 3 in AA. So he had a 10 home run season last year. But it's mostly off of fastballs. His recognition of breaking pitches is pretty poor. And his strikeout totals throughout his career are rather unseemly.
Yeah.
He had a dang near 40% strikeout rate last year. And he's been above 35% for that strikeout rate every year since 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about this later, but what the Rockies don't need right now is more strikeouts. And it's like, yeah, last year with AAA Durham, he drew 15 walks to 73 strikeouts over 169 at bats. So you look at, it's one of those things where you look at the elite speed and you go, this speed is incredible. But we've talked about this with Brenton Doyle. We've talked about it with other speedsters on the Rockies. It's meaningless on the base paths if you can't get on base to begin with. What I will say is that Greg Jones is having a pretty decent spring training so far. He has an on-base percentage of .438 and OPS of 1.081 with 5 hits and 14 at-bats, 2 stolen bases, and he's only struck out 7 times, which that is an improvement, but the question is if it is a sustained improvement. It's a complicated trade, and I just fail to see how this makes the team better or sets the team up for more success in the future by dealing away a decent pitching prospect for Greg Jones.
And I guess we should also preface, like, this isn't us hating on Greg Jones, saying like, oh, this player's garbage. Like, neither of us are saying that. And wish him all the best luck. Hope he does continue to develop and figure something out.
Yeah,
hope it's he just kills the him. Move. This move just doesn't work for the Rockies, I think. It doesn't make sense. If somebody else makes this trade, you know, a different, like say an Astros or another team kind of makes this trade, okay, you're like, okay, I can see they're looking for this extra utility infielder. But when you're the Rockies who are trending towards a younger team and have guys that basically fit what they're looking for already with him, it's just confusing of what they're trying to do. And I made this comparison. They're basically trying to reinvent the wheel. This guy, to me, like he reminds me of Eric Young Jr., switch hitting, utility, you know, infielder, outfielder type of guy. He has good speed, has a little bit of pop here and there. Garrett Hampson fits into this camp too, but you know, mostly a bench guy at best. And it just doesn't make sense, this move for where the Rockies are right now as a team, especially like we said with all these spring training camp battles. There's already guys that fit what they're looking for. But maybe they're trying to figure out some more roster stuff that we'll get into later to where, oh, he gives them some flexibility of, oh, you can combine a Zimmer and a Trejo into one guy. But the thing, I think he'll start in AAA because maybe the Rockies then will work on him. Like, okay, we want you to learn some more second base. Try your hand at third base. We need, if he can play those other two infield positions and add that to his repertoire, I think that will help him in the long run, just in his career here. But it's just confusing. Best of luck to him, but
yeah,
this is a head scratcher.
I also feel like this is not a situation for him where it is going to generate immediate success. Where we're already set at center field. We're already set at shortstop, his two primary positions. So at most he'd be backing those up. He can't play third or second. He's played a little bit of right field, but that's it. His bat is still a tremendous work in progress. And the Rockies are absolutely packed to the gills with promising outfielders and middle infielders. In the outfield, you've got Jordan Beck, Zach Veen, Yankiel Fernandez, Benny Montgomery. In the infield, you've got Deon Jorge, you've got Adele Amador. There's plenty of guys who could have filled this role. And Greg Jones isn't, you know, he's not ancient. He's 26. He's around the age where most guys start hitting the big leagues. But a lot of these guys are significantly younger than him as well. And we know that Jordan Beck is close to the big leagues. They're starting him off in AAA. He had an incredible show out this spring. So I just feel like it's an odd situation. And then there's the other hand of, if the Tampa Bay Rays, the noted pitching factory, want one of your guys, that's maybe a signal that you should hang on to that guy.
Though they did take Tony Losi, and unfortunately that didn't pan out. So
I like Tony Losi still.
Yeah, unfortunately it didn't pan out for him. But yeah, it's best of luck to Joe Rock, and we just couldn't have that nice thing of having Rock on the Rockies. We just can't have nice things. And that's the thing, is Joe Rock, maybe there's something behind the scenes we don't know about, or just they don't see him fitting into the mix among the organization, because I think he was going to be Rule 5 draft eligible here after this season or something close to that. So maybe they don't see room for him. But still, why trade him now? Let him play out the season. And then, if you're just kind of messing around, then you can trade him away for something. Because this just feels like a weird return. No, this Greg Jones for somebody else, that kind of makes sense. But just Joe Rock, I know that number 15 pitch starting pitching prospect, it just doesn't mix, because now Greg Jones was in the Rays top 30. He's still in ours. I think he's like 24th now for the Rockies, so still in that top 30. But it just seems like an odd one for one swap in the potential of the two guys in their futures in the big leagues.
And for having a guy whose name is Rock on the Rockies. Come on. Mm-hmm.
Solid as a rock. He could have come out of the bull. He could have come into games. That would be his intro song from Arrested Development.
He is Joe Rock. He is Joe Island.
Boo.
I like that one. I've been sitting on that one for a while. Okay, let me have it. But it's just, you know, we wish both Greg Jones and Joe Rock the best of luck, because we're not trying to hate on Greg Jones. And I think if it had been a different acquisition, or we had acquired Greg Jones in a different way for a different player, I think a lot of reactions would be very different. To what they are now, where this is now one of my best performing tweets of all time, is that I consider the trade very baffling. That I've never had a tweet perform this well, where I'm talking about how this trade makes no sense, where when you're log jammed in the outfield and middle infield and you're desperate for pitching, you trade a top prospect pitcher for someone who plays a position that you've already got so many guys on. And it does. The way they did this makes no sense. Now, if it had been a different one for one swap, like maybe we traded an outfielder for Greg Jones or something like that, one of these guys that maybe fallen down on the prospect rankings, or, you know, think could use a change of scenery or anything like that, then I think people, I think I react, I think you react, I think everybody reacts a lot differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say if like a random, like, oh, we're trading Jeff Criswell over to Tampa Bay for Greg Jones. I could stomach that one. Like, that one would, that would make sense. Kind of feels a guy that's, you know, getting close to the big leagues. That seems like a different situation there. Whereas Joe Rocky's a lot younger. He's just barely reached AAA, and I don't know. I think that that context, that perspective around the trade, if it was different, we'd be having different kinds of, like, yeah, that's fine. That makes sense. That's an interesting little trade. But I think adding in a starting pitcher that the Rockies need so desperately, Evan, that's what makes it. You're like,
Especially with last year where we ended up having to use 17 different starting pitchers.
Yeah. Like, why are you wasting away from an already depleted resource?
I think if what doesn't help is that the team is so insular that we mm-hmm. don't really know their perspective or reasoning behind making this trade, mm-hmm. Which definitely doesn't help things.
Yeah. Who knows? And he still has a minuscule chance to make the opening day roster. Maybe. Yeah.
He is currently assigned to the minors. I believe the Rays had optioned him prior to trading him over to us. But there is a non-0% chance that he is on the opening day roster. All we can really do is wait and see. Greg Jones, actually, day of recording for this, is going to make his Rockies debut in spring training against the Cincinnati Reds. So we'll see how he does. You know, best of luck to him. Best of luck to Joe Rockoff in Tampa. You know, if you are a pitcher, it's one of the best places to go to try and further develop. So we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to take a quick break and be right back. So don't go anywhere.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to Affected by Altitude with Evan and Skyler. And we just talked about, you know, Rockies pitching and prospects, things like that. We talked about Greg Jones, who has struck out a ton during his minor league career. And that sort of leads us into our next topic, which is that Thomas Harding, in a very interesting and well-written article on MLB.com, wrote about how Hansley Bam Bam Mullins, the Rockies hitting coach, is working with the team to try and cut down on strikeouts. The Rockies are one of the most strikeout heavy teams in the league last year. And, you know, Mullins himself said that it was embarrassing to strike out that much. He said, "I was embarrassed to be part of leading the league in strikeouts. We didn't hit homers. If you don't hit homers, it's something different. When you don't hit homers, you compound it by striking out. Something's got to change." Everybody bought in. Some of the guys were embarrassed with the strikeouts, but every year is a clean slate. So over the offseason and this year, they've been working on the hitting program to try and cut down strikeouts. And the question is, and I know it's spring training, has it really worked? Because the Rockies are still striking out a lot this spring. Against Jose Ureña yesterday against the Rangers, they struck out 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just makes you wonder how long it's going to take, how it's going to take hold. Because we know that, you know, this doesn't happen overnight. It's impossible to immediately. And that's why we said last year when we were talking about, you know, maybe cleaning house of the coaching staff, is that you keep Hensley Mullins because he's only had one season now to start installing his methodology, his hitting philosophy, all of that. And it sounds like he's doing a lot of interesting things, especially with how people's plate approaches are going with 2 strikes, you know, talking about players with when to maybe choke up on the bat, when to shorten that swing more efficiently. But at the same time, you look at the spring training numbers, and the Rockies have 274 total strikeouts. So that would put them in basically fifth place or sixth place for strikeout totals so far this spring. Individually, everybody is just striking out a ton, where you have, you know, 11 guys who have all struck out more than 10 times. Nolan Jones has struck out 19 times, Tolia 18, Zimmer 18, Montero 16. And you just wonder, is this still going to be a problem this year?
Yes. but it's nice that I hope they can. It's one thing to say, like, yeah, we're working on changing some things, and it's another to see it in action. And, you know, maybe there'll still be some guys that are just unwilling to make some changes, but there are those that are like, yeah, I need to fix this and do everything. And so, no, there's guys we can see that are working. I think, like, Brenton Doyle's had a good spring, cutting down on his strikeouts and just putting the ball in play more, I think, has been the Rockies' goal, and which is good. Because strikeouts do nothing. You can still have a productive ground out as opposed to striking out. Guy at second, well, maybe you can move him over to third. But if you strike out, he's still at second base unless that ball went to the backstop. And even then, it's a risk and you might not move up. So it's nice that Bam Bam's trying to focus in on, okay, guys, we got to put the ball in play. And I think there was one of those other quotes in that article that I'm trying to find here. But it's like guys that don't want to give up their A swing. And like, okay, would you rather strike out then?
Yeah, you know, that type of about, thing. He's talking about not having, you know, not letting the ego get to you. Mm-hmm. And then I really like that. It's like, should a hitter abandon his A swing? Would you rather strike out then? And you're seeing this from the veteran leadership on the team as well. You know, Charlie Blackman has been fully on board with this, and we know Chuck has the impeccable plate approach. He does not strike out often, and it's something that he wants to see the other guys see as well. And some of the other veterans are embracing it. We've seen Elias Diaz; he's been choking up more on the swing, especially in two strikeout counts. Brendan Rodgers is trying to reduce the effort on his swing. And Ryan McMahon is also shortened up his swing. And we'll talk about Ryan McMahon in just a second here. But what we really need is that at the end of the season, we need to be bearing some fruit about cutting down on strikeouts with this organization. Mm-hmm. Because we all recognize the Rockies are not going to be competitive this year. They're probably not playing 500 ball. They're probably not even close to 500 at the end of the season. But the whole point of the rebuild is setting new philosophies into motion. And this new philosophy of cutting down on strikeouts is going to be hugely important for this season and seasons going forward.
Mm-hmm. And what better resource than a Hall of Famer in your organization helping share some knowledge, like holding meetings and the wisdom? Because did Todd Helton have the same exact swing at the start of the at-bat towards the end of an at-bat? You know, especially those long battles. No, his was making contact, and then the power would come. And I think that's the big thing that I've always known my hitting philosophy, baseball, is put the bat on the ball, and good things will happen. And because a strikeout does nothing. Like, yeah, you need to be absolutely PO'd if you strike out, because it's the worst feeling in baseball when you strike out. I hate striking out. I was a mess. Like, it infuriated me. I hate striking out. And you get in those games where you strike out two times, you're like, son of a gun. Like, this is awful. And so it is embarrassing to have a bunch of strikeouts. And I hope that Rockies fully embrace that from top to bottom. Every single player on the big league roster and through the organization, right? Strikeouts don't do you any good.
Yeah.
Don't you dare blame your home road splits, because you can look at Todd Helton, said, okay, what did he do that made him so successful, and how can we implement that? Now, of course, there's an innate ability and talent, but those are still things that you can learn. Anybody can grow to become an elite player. And the tools are there for them, and they can learn how to do this and two-strike approach, put the ball in play, and things will happen. And lay off those pitches in the dirt, Tovar. I'm looking at you.
Literally the only time a strikeout is the acceptable outcome is if the other outcome is grounding into a double play.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Where if you got one out and you got runners on first and second, I would much rather you strike out than ground into a double play. Mm-hmm. But I still would rather you not strike out.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating because sometimes it felt like last year, especially, I was watching myself play MLB The Show or something where you're just swinging at everything. You're not laying off pitches, mm-hmm. you know, especially the younger guys chasing, having just not a good eye for breaking pitches. And that's the other thing is recognizing pitches out of the zone is that the Rockies need to increase that walk total. Where they're doing okay this spring, actually. They're about middle of the pack in terms of walks. Not amazing, not terrible. But then you look at, say, you know, the San Francisco Giants have 133 walks so far this spring. The defending champions, the Rangers, have 96. And then the Rockies have 90. But it's a thing where it's like, if you're striking out, then you need to be taking walks more as well. That was something that Bud Black talked about with, you know, your strikeout rate's got to be more balanced out with the amount of walks you're taking. And we have seen some improvement this year in terms of walks, where guys who are notably pretty strikeout heavier are drawing multiple walks. Michael Tolia and Nolan Jones and Ryan McMahon have all drawn five walks. You know, before he was designated for assignment, I was actually legitimately very impressed with the improvements that Sam Hilliard had made in his plate approach, where he had drawn six walks to six strikeouts. And that's something that'll need to continue as well, because we talked about it with Greg Jones. We talked about it before. If you're not on base, your speed or your ability to steal or anything like that is not helpful.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's helped Brenton Doyle. Now, if he can get on base, yeah, he's even had some like little infield dribblers. Like, they're still improving quality of contact, because again, like, if you're too aggressive on pitches and it's a little bouncer over to short, one out. No, there's so many intricacies to hitting and plate approach and figuring out the right balance and everything. But the thing remains true that your odds of getting a hit, getting on base, your average is drastically worse when you have two strikes and when you're behind in the count. So there's guys that are overly aggressive, swinging at everything. That's not good. That needs to change. But there's guys that aren't aggressive enough. Oh, and they watch strike one right down the middle of the plate. Strike one, they swing at strike two, then they swing at strike three. You know?
Even worse is striking out looking on a pitch in the zone.
Yeah.
That drives me insane.
On a fastball right over the middle of the plate.
And I get that, you know, your on base percentage potential dramatically decreases in that two strike count, but sometimes you got to take the bat off your shoulders. And even if you're at least making contact with it, that's something. But I feel like we saw so much last year, and I need to look up the numbers and see if this can be backed up, is that the Rockies just struck out looking a ton last year as well. Because there's a difference between being patient and there's a difference between being too patient.
Mm-hmm. Almost passive.
Yeah.
It's intrinsic and ingrained in hitting is balance. Balance in everything. Balance in your mechanics. Balance in your approach. Like, my approach, I was swinging first pitch all the time. I am an aggressive fella. I would swing. I do it in softball, too. First pitch, I'm swinging. I don't care. I'm swinging. Because that's often the best pitch you're going to get. But then you go into the battle mode. Okay, first pitch, I missed it. Okay, now we go into battle mode. So it's good to see the Rockies working on that. And that's a good storyline to watch throughout the season if they can, you know, improve on that.
And speaking of improvements, a guy that we feel has, in terms of the strikeouts and in terms of getting on base, a guy we feel like we've really seen improvement from the spring that's not really getting talked about that much is Ryan McMahon. There was an article from Thomas Harding yesterday talking about how Ryan McMahon is working on his swing and cutting down on strikeouts, cutting down on swings and misses, where last year we talked about at length how much Ryan McMahon was striking out. He led the team in strikeouts. He's one of the league leaders in strikeouts. He struck out a lot. And we talked about it where he just looked like he had this gigantic hole in his swing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if the pitch was in the zone, he'd potentially miss it. And with he's shortened his swing up and he's talking about how it's more to get the bat on the ball and cut down on swings and misses. And he talked about this. He said, "You've heard me say plenty of times, I really want to cut down on swings and misses. I've done a good job so far, and it's something I'm trying to keep moving forward. Shorten up my swing, being handsy. Last year when I was going good, it was a lot of the same swing thoughts." And you look at him this spring, and that's what I feel like we have seen from him, mm-hmm. where Ryan McMahon has, you know, struck out 10 times, but that's actually on the lower side for the guys who have struck out a lot and drawn 5 walks. His on-base percentage in 16 spring training games and 43 spring training at-bats is .438. That's battle play. That's good. And yeah, he's only got one home run so far, but spring training isn't really about hitting home runs, and he's making good, powerful contact. And you know how I know that is because he has 2 triples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and watching McMahon last year is something I noticed a lot too, is he's got this big looping swing where it almost, you know, kind of get caught casting at times, casting that bat head out behind him and just be late on things, and that results in a lot of swing and miss. There's a lot of big, long moving parts to his whole swing. And no, it in a sense, it was kind of like cargo. Cargo at times, too, would get that big, long, you know, wind up swing, and that would result in swing and misses. Now, cargo just had that elite bat speed. He could get to anything. Whereas McMahon, it had that big looping swing, and he just wasn't catching up to anything. But then watching him in spring training, the few times we've gotten to watch him on TV, you know, just on the Friday when they played the Rangers, watching that game, and you know, the broadcasters mentioned it too. Like, he had a lot of good swings. They didn't all result in hits, but his first hit, blast one that cut the gap, and he ended up with a triple. And it was a nice, quick, short swing, explosive. And that's what's going to be key for McMahon watching him, is that nice, easy, you know, just shorten things up in a sense that he's getting to the ball quicker. Instead of loading it back and bring it around, but it's a quicker load and bring it through the zone. And it's something that I want to keep go dive into a little bit as much as I can, looking at video to see the differences. But you can tell, and that's quality of contact. He is smacking that ball, and it's working. And not everything's resulting in a hit. That's okay. But a .372 average in 43 at-bats, that'll play. I don't care if it's not a ton of home runs. I think this year I'm less concerned about guys hitting a bunch of home runs because I instead want to see improvement of just get hits, put the ball in play and get hits. The home runs will come. Like I said before, focus on making contact. You got to walk before you can run. You got to single before you can homer.
It's like you said, it's the quality of contact where, mm-hmm. yeah, Ryan McMahon, when he dials back and gets that big looping swing, yeah, he's generating a ton of power. But we know that he's also capable of generating power on that shorter, more compact swing. And it's better to hit a couple home runs, but also get lots of quality contact, get more hits, mm-hmm. get on base more. Then, yeah, you're hitting a decent number of home runs, but you're hitting like .172 or something like that.
Power does not come from a big, no, huge wind up on the load. Power from hitting comes from speed, and no, pitchers are providing plenty of speed, and so it's when they meet that speed, a nice quick whip. No, he's got a strong load. It was just the hands part end up drifting a bit, and so shortening that up, getting that bat head out quicker on that whip, that's going to generate plenty of power for him too.
Exactly. So he's got the natural power. He's got all the power he needs without having to try and force it. That's what I always talked about this with Sam Hilliard, is Sam Hilliard, when he is not trying to force it, has one of the most beautiful and effortlessly powerful swings. But when you're trying to force it, when you're trying to generate more power where you don't necessarily need it. It ends up with that kind of thing. And where we've said year in, year out, you know, this needs to be the year where Ryan McMahon breaks out, has this breakout offensive season. But what I think this year more than anything for Ryan McMahon is, yes, it would be nice if he hit 30 home runs. But the big thing for success this year is going to be a higher batting average, a higher on-base percentage, and less strikeouts.
Yeah, a more, you know, consistent season, I think, where the hot streaks and the slumps, they're shorter. Well, we want the hot streaks going as long as we can, but the peaks and valleys, you want those valleys to be shorter durations instead of, oh, he's hot for a month, and then he disappears for 2 months. You know, where he had that really good month last year and then exploded for a bunch of home runs and then struggled for like a couple months near the end of the season, where he then barely got over that, you know, got to that 23, 24 home run mark.
Yeah, and it's for Rymack, it really is like the hot and cold streaks, where in like April, he wasn't amazing. May, he was okay. Had a red hot June, and then disappeared in July, and then disappeared in August, and then disappeared in September. Yeah. And in September, he finished the month with like a 192 batting average and a slugging percentage of like 0.295 for that month. And that's what we need, is more than just being a power hitter. What I think this year is going to be is we've got to see Ryan Mann develop into the more complete player. He's got that elite third base defense. He's got decent speed. And if he can make contact, he can hit that ball with authority. But he's got to tie that all together this year.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully he does. Yeah, he's going to be an important piece of that Rockies lineup this year. And they need him to break out. Otherwise, they have some decisions to make after this season. Because we can only hear about the potential he has so many times before. That potential is never going to happen.
Yeah, especially when he is almost 30.
Yeah, and he's got several years of regular big league playing time under his belt.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry, he'll break out soon enough. He's 45 and just retired.
It's just a little airborne. It's still good.
It's gone. I know. Well, we're going to take another quick break. Goodness me, a quick break, apparently. We're going to take a quick ad break again. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back and finish things out with our last segment. So don't go anywhere. After these messages, we'll be right back. I should get the actual sound clip for that. Welcome back to Affected by Altitude with Evan and Skyler for our third and final segment of today. And we're just about done with spring training. By the time this episode comes out, we are just a few days away from opening day for the Colorado Rockies, which means that the 26-man roster is taking its final shape. It's getting to the point where it's going to be to start the season. And we've already seen a bunch of moves get made that have been really interesting. You know, we've seen guys who have been optioned or reassigned to minor league camp. And now it's just about seeing who is going to be on the 26-man roster. And what's interesting is that, you know, Patrick Saunders pointed out, or no, sorry, it was Thomas Harding, not Patrick Saunders. Thomas Harding pointed out the Rockies are still potentially looking for upgrades in the roster and could be making other moves. And the question is, what kind of moves are those? Because we talked about this, Skyler, between you and I, about how, you know, the Greg Jones trade makes more sense if they're gearing up to make some other moves. But I just don't know what kind of moves those are going to be.
Yeah, it's confusing because they got to figure out, you know, the logistics of the main roster right now, which for the most part is pretty well set in most of the, there's only like, you know, a handful of things that they have to figure out. We already know catcher, Diaz and Stallings. Pretty easy. Chris Bryan will be on the roster, mostly at first base, but he'll cycle around. Brandon Rogers at second, McMahon at third, Tovar at short. Outfield will be Jones, Doyle, Charlie Blackmon may get more starts in right field than we think. Right field is still kind of that up in the air that it feels like. But Montero is likely to make the roster. Rotation's pretty well set, and the bullpen's pretty well set. There's like one spot in the bullpen that is kind of up for grabs. So there's, again, like we mentioned before, Greg Jones kind of muddies that water of, well, who's the bench utility guys? Is it Trejo, Zimmer? Who fits into that? What do they do with Tolia? What do they do with Bouchard? So there's these little pieces that are pretty well set, and these little ones that are like, okay, are they going to be on the roster, or do one of these guys get moved out? Do they change? Does somebody get sent down to AAA? Like, what do we do here with some of these guys that they have some question marks about?
Yeah, it's like Alan Trejo, if he's not going to be your utility guy, what are you going to do with him then? Because, yeah, you can keep him stashed in AAA, but there's a guy who you could potentially get value for where another team might want a utility guy of his caliber. Or Bradley Zimmer, even, like, we don't even know if he's going to make the team, despite the fact that he's had, by all accounts, an excellent spring. Like, but you also have to wonder if it's a mirage, because Zimmer has literally never hit this well in his entire career. So either he's doing something, he made all these incredible offseason adjustments and is ready to rock and roll for the first time in his career, or it's a mirage.
And the thing with adding some of these guys, like Ty Block, seems Thomas Harding projects him as a guy making the bullpen. He's had a good spring and could be another extra lefty out there. But there's three guys. They have a full 40-man roster, Evan. If they were to add Block, Zimmer, and Trejo, all three non-roster guys, that they have to open up three spots. Ramon Marquez goes on the 60-day IL, so that's one spot open. What do you do to open up the other two spots? So that's where more moves have to be made. You know, adding Greg Jones, okay, he occupies the 40-man roster, but he's never played in, he hasn't made his debut before. So he has no big league experience. It just gets, you look, have to then look at that 40-man roster of, well, who can we kick off of here? Who might get DFA'd to add Ty Block again for the third straight year? Dude loves pitching spring training for the Rockies.
I mean, I love Ty Block, so I'm happy to have him around, but it really is you need to make these 40-man spots. And you look at the 40-man roster right now, there's a bunch of guys on the 40 who are dedicated minor leaguers, who, you know, are not going to make their debuts, but there's no one who really stands out to me as, yeah, it's fine to DFA this guy, no one else will claim him, or it's fine that we get rid of this guy. Like, maybe if he's not going to make the opening day roster, which he hasn't, he's already been optioned and reassigned to minor league camp, maybe you DFA like Riley Pint or Nick Mears or something like that. But there's not a whole lot of flexibility for who you could DFA, and it's the same for a ton of our roster space is taken up by infielders right now on that 40-man roster. And I don't think there's anybody on that 40 in the infielder section who the Rockies would be comfortable with designating for assignment to clear them off the 40 and risk exposing them to waivers. Like, 'cause here are all the infielders on the 40. Adele Amador, no way. Warming Bernabéu, maybe just protected him from the Rule 5 draft, so why would you do that? Same for Julio Carreras. Hunter Goodman, maybe, but I don't think you'd want to risk it. Greg Jones, you're not going to DFA a guy you just traded for.
And then it's happened before. It would be dumb, but
you shouldn't DFA happened. You just traded for and added to the 40. And then everyone else is a potential, is a starter or potential starter. McMahon, Montero, Rogers, Tolia, and Tovar. So there's just, I don't see the flexibility here unless they're going to make some trades or something like that to clear up 40-man roster space for additional guys.
And that comes into, what do they do with Michael Tolia, who has basically done everything this spring to earn a regular playing spot, earn a spot on the roster, but is carrying Sean Bouchard, Ilarius Montero, and Michael Tolia on the big league roster is that what you want?
Yeah.
You know, one of those three, something has to give with one of those three guys we've talked about before. That six-man platoon's not going to work, Evan. Get that out of their brains. Yeah. That's too many players for too few spots.
And it's tough because you're absolutely right. Michael Tolia has done literally everything needed of him to make the opening day roster this year. He's hitting very well. Yes, he's still striking out a lot, but his on-base percentage is looking good. His batting average is good. He's getting the ball in play. He's drawing more walks. He has 5 home runs. Like, Tolia's done pretty much everything that they have asked of him to make this roster. So you give him that spot. And then you have Elias Montero, who started off the spring extremely hot, though was definitely cooled off. And he's out of options completely. So it's either DFA him or he's on the opening day roster. And it's just, it's tough because the Rockies always make things so hard on themselves with this, with these log jams and wasting options and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Montero, he doesn't have that safety net. He has to perform, type of thing. That mentality that we've talked about before is very flawed. Yeah, there's, you got to figure out, because you still have other needs. You need a utility infielder, a backup infielder, a guy that can play those middle infields and possibly third base. Because, yeah, you could throw Montero at third, but the Rockies have made it pretty clear, yeah, we don't want him playing that position. He's no good. Nolan Jones, they're not going to slide him in at third. They could if they wanted to, but he's pretty much ingrained in left field because he's your best option out there.
First base with Chris Bryant. In the infield is a waste of, I would say it is a waste of Jones's athleticism and arm strength.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing is this is, yeah, you just brought in Greg Jones. If he's not on the opening day roster, you know, as much as I don't want to say it, the guy who's earned that backup outfielder spot is Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just going on spring training performance and the guy's trying to earn it, Zimmer's earned the spot without a doubt. And if he could keep up that performance during the regular season, if we did add him, then there's a very valuable trade chip at the deadline
to bring
in more prospects.
And him and Alan Trejo have both earned their spots with the team on the bench as the utility guy and the outfield guy. Like, those two have earned their spots. But like we said before, you have to figure out how to put them on the roster again, because you only have really two spots you have to open up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we figure one person will take Ermon's spot. Okay. But you still have a full 40 man who ends up on the chopping block.
And we know that if it's likely to be Ty Block who takes Ermon's spot, because they like Ty Block. He's got the flexibility of being able to start in a pinch, and he's solid out of the bullpen. And I also agree with you. Like, Trejo's earned his spot because he kind of got the short end of it when he was outrighted over the offseason in order to clear space for guys on the 60 to be put back on the roster.
It was for Cal Quantrill when they acquired Quantrill.
And he's had a really quietly good spring where his batting average isn't that great, but his on-base percentage and slugging are both fine. He's got 2 home runs. And the big thing is he's drawing walks, and he's not striking out that much. 4 walks, 6 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a great option for a utility guy who can come in off the bench and pitch hit, who can play every infield position basically. And I'm sure you could teach him outfield. He's got the legs for it.
Well, wasn't there that offseason they're toying with that idea of, oh, he could see some time in left field, and then that never came to pass. But so that's been in their repertoire. He's basically our Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, where he's a good defender. He can be a decent hitter and just play multiple positions, but never, you know, be the big flashy player at any of them.
Yeah.
But he's earned his spot. And we talk about Charlie Blackmon. You know, Thomas Harding writes in an article projecting the opening day lineup that, oh, Charlie Blackmon probably showed up in camp. They liked how he's looking. It says, black men whose experience at Coors Field made a difference when he was healthy last year has shown up well enough in camp that he's being looked at for frequent starts in right field. Chris Bryant is our presumed first baseman, but will also rotate into right field and along with DH. And then Sean Bouchard had started camp slowly because of an oblique issue. So his numbers aren't that great, but they still like his plate approach that he's shown at the big league level, even if he's not playing every day. So there's options, and then Michael Toglia can play right field. There's just so many decisions, and we're like, what? You're looking at making more moves in a way? Like, I don't see how everything fits into this puzzle.
Yeah.
It seems like they're getting extra pieces out of the box. And you're like, what the heck? Where'd this puzzle piece come from?
And it's so frustrating because, you know, Charlie Blackmon should not be an everyday right fielder anymore. But at the same time, last year in the time that he spent in right field, he had one of his best defensive seasons in years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does show that when you're taking him off your feet, off his feet occasionally to be the DH, he can play good right field.
Yeah.
But then you have to look at where pieces fit, and it just seems like nothing fits because, okay, fine. Why don't you rotate Bryant and Blackmon in right field, and whoever is not in right field is the DH, and then just make a decision on who your first baseman is. Is it going to be Toglia or is it going to be Montero?
And that's where I stand, and I talked about this with our buddy Paul Holden over at Locked On Rockies, which, hey, we might be on a new episode here pretty soon too, Evan. Maybe the day you're hearing this episode. But they have to make a decision on Montero. I think it comes down to what are they going to do with Montero?
Yeah.
Because he's out of options. He's still residue from the awful Nolan Arenado trade, and they've just haven't made him a priority is what Paul and I had talked about. He's definitely not the priority, which is unfortunate because we love Monty and we
adore Monty.
We know what he can do and what he could be, but that's at the moment, all it is what if, hope. We hope he could do this instead of what do we have right now? It's not consistent enough. And the Rockies aren't making him a priority, and it's jamming up the roster. So maybe it has to come down to, okay, he's the one that they have to make a decision on.
And it's really tough for Monty because he has cooled. Where he started off spring training pretty hot and was like, all right, he's earning his roster spot. But it just really feels like he's cooled off, where in the month of March, he started the month hitting .357, and now his average is all the way down to .235. His on-base percentage started the month at .412, and now it's all the way down to .286. His slugging percentage went from an unsustainable .929, but now it's .490. He hasn't hit a home run in the entire month of March. He's only hit one home run in the entire month of March for spring training. He's struck out 14 times in March compared to just the two he had in February. Granted, he only played in like the five or six games in February versus he had 12 at-bats in February versus 39 in March. So that's, you know, definitely a bigger sample size. But he's very clearly cooled. And I think that doesn't do him favors for a team that we talked about this before, doesn't really seem to believe in him that much and hasn't really prioritized him that much.
Yeah.
And I think that leaves, the more I think about it and the more I hate to say it, the more that leaves him as the odd man out.
Yeah. And no, it could be one of those things that they still, for some reason, hold on to him, which, he's a man without a position, too, is the problem. Where, yeah, he can play first base, but they've kind of committed Chris Bryant to that spot. And, yeah, he can DH, but we have so many guys that can also DH. And so there's really no clear everyday playing time for someone like him. And I think that's something we've talked about at length. You've written about it for Purple Row at length,
like,
of...
like three straight seasons?
Yeah. They keep mismanaging him. They won't make him a priority, won't commit to him, give him that opportunity to succeed, but they also won't let him go.
Yeah.
And it could be that could be some of those moves that we could see the Rockies starting to make to upgrade, improve the roster. Is this the time in spring training where veterans and guys getting their opt-outs from teams, getting released by teams, and so there's going to be a whole influx of free agents and other things entering the market here leading up to opening day that have had full spring trainings, you know, some good, some bad, that then the other teams can look at of, okay, we want that guy on our team because we weren't able to sign him, but he's had a good spring and we want to add him into our mix. So that stuff could happen too. Other minor league deals and things. But there's just so much that has to happen. Rockies need to figure out what they're doing in-house first and then look outside of, okay, and we can bring these guys in.
Yeah. And it's tough because, you know, we're in the home stretch of spring training and this episode's going up on Monday. It's Saturday afternoon right now, just before the Rockies are about to start their game. This could all be completely different by tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. By Monday when you're hearing this, who knows? Everything we've said is moot at this point. But like, hey,
if things get really crazy, we might have to sit down and re-record portions.
Or we'll just record next episode.
Or do an addendum episode or something like that to go, well, gee, a lot of stuff happened in the last day and a half.
Whoops. And space-time continuum.
We always do joke that news always happens right after we finish recording. So I expect that luck to continue. But, you know, all we can really do is wait and see. There's just a handful of spring training games left. There's less than a full week to go until we are in regular season baseball, which means things are going to happen and they're going to happen quick. So, you know, stick with us and we'll try and talk about everything as it develops.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So that's going to about do it here for us on Affected by Altitude. Thank you so much for listening on your favorite podcasting platform of choice. Please feel free to leave a review or rate us, you know, like and 5 stars, smash that subscribe button. Remember to hit the bell for notifications if you're watching on YouTube. Is that a thing? I've never hit the bell on YouTube, and I still get everything showing up in my feed. So
it shows in the feed. You get a notification that your favorite subscribers posted something. I think that's what the bell does.
See, I hate getting notifications but I'm a weirdo. When my phone goes off, I'm like, this better be important.
Yeah. I already, when you know the schedule of your favorite channels, when they're posting stuff,
you know, when
you don't need the bell.
Like one of my favorite channels, click that bell I know that their videos go up around noon on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I know to be looking for those. And for us, these episodes go public on YouTube on Monday at 9 o'clock a.m. Mountain Time.
Yeah.
Skyler, where can the folks find you at?
Find me over on Twitter at @sideline_crowd, writing Wednesday rock piles for purplerow.com and writing stuff for fansfirstsports.com.
And you can find me on Twitter at @Evan_Lang27. You can also find me under that handle on Instagram. You can catch me doing the Monday Rock Piles and Pebble Report over on purplerow.com. I did the first Pebble Report of the year last week. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Talked about the spring breakout game. Those will start being more regular as we hit the actual minor league season in a week or two here. You can also follow Rocky Mountain Rooftop on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all at the same handle. It's at Rocky Mountain Rooftop, at @ROCKYMTN Rooftop.
And we got some fun stuff coming up this coming week of just random episodes. We'll have this podcast, a special interview podcast you did, I assume.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. That's probably going to go up on... Do you have an Every Rocky Ever going up this week?
I will. On Wednesday, we'll have Every Rocky Ever. A Guess the Rocky Round 2 with my brother is a fun one.
Well, then let's say that you will get a special interview episode on Tuesday.
Ooh, there we go.
So we're gonna have it packed with content. I'll give you a little preview for that. I interviewed a member of the staff for the Spokane Indians, the high A affiliate of the Colorado Rockies out in Spokane, Washington. His name is Aaron Kroom. He is the mascot coordinator and I just spent a whole hour talking to him, and I'm trying to get his title straight. But he works with the Spokane Indians. He was an absolute delight to have on. I'm really looking forward to you guys seeing that interview. And here it is. Partner services and mascot coordinator.
There we go.
I had it written down. That was fantastic. And we'll have plenty other stuff for you. But thank you so much for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you. We've been off to a really great start this year, and we're looking forward to providing you with even more as the Major League Baseball season for 2024 gets underway. So, as always, thank you for listening. Keep watching the skis, and Skyler, hit him with it.
Farewell.